episode 60 of Magic the Amateuring.
Yeah, welcome.
We've made it 60 episodes with you. This is a show for magic learners, people who love the game of magic. Megan is opening
people
it.
People who drink soda.
A Pepsi right now.
Yeah.
People returning to the game and those who just like a giggle.
People who drink soda, but they call it pop.
Which we all do.
Do we?
Wait, you call it soda?
Yes, I call it soda, like a normal human being.
Whatever. Ben, you're the tiebreaker on this one.
I don't drink soda.
But he called it soda!
Why did you call it soda?
He called it soda!
Oh, well.
I called it pop until high school, and then everyone changed to soda, and I was like, well, I better be like everyone else.
Yeah. Because it's the correct thing to do.
That's just
fitting in.
That's just the kind of person I am.
If you want to fit in, for example, play Magic the Gathering in copious amounts.
Yeah, right.
You will fit right in.
I mean, it wasn't until a year ago that you guys learned.
That's right. Now we fit in better than ever. That's super not true. It's really not true.
Well, everybody, I'm one of your hosts, Maria. Megan and I, as Ben just said, started playing a year ago.
Yeah, man.
Say hi, Megan.
Hey, guys.
And Ben was one who taught us.
Mm-hmm. I am their sensei. I was grown in a chamber and then frozen. And I just waited for them to be ready to play magic. And now here I am and I'm teaching them.
Wow.
Interesting.
Can you go back in that chamber at any time?
Yes. Eventually, I will go back and wait for the next generation.
Do you have to?
No, I mean, it's my chamber. I can do whatever I want with it.
Is it like the Austin Powers scene?
Okay, I said it was a chamber, but really, it's my bedroom.
Do you call your bedroom the chamber, ladies?
Yes. Welcome to the chamber.
Oh, my God.
Would you like to step into my chamber?
Wait, so is the process that you just described just like sleeping?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Oh. Okay, sure.
All right.
Well, everybody, we've got a good show for you today. We've got a For the Noobs about Friday Night Magics.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do some history shit on Morph, a cool old, what's the word I'm looking for? Keyword ability? Jesus, it's early. We were up late. we also are going to answer some Dear Abbeys for you.
By it's early, Maria means it's noon.
Okay. It's all relative, Megan.
Okay, sure.
And we have a flavor text theater. By the way, I just want to let people know this in case they haven't been listening for too long. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Oh. And if you leave us a review on iTunes, we will make a pun out of your username on our show. So we would love to see that. You can also leave a review on Stitcher if that is how you get your podcasts.
Stitcher.
We have currently zero reviews on Stitcher, so roll them in.
I don't even know what Stitcher is, you guys. Never been to it.
Oh.
Never, not acquainted with it
at all.
Well,
Stitcher is an app for mobile phones that allows you to play podcasts. And one of the cool things about it is if you forgot to download it ahead of time or whatever, it can just stream it. Like while it downloads.
Oh,
yeah, yes.
Yeah. And they also have like a web app too. So if you listen to podcasts at work or whatever, but don't want to use iTunes, you can use that. And then it'll keep track of your playlist, so it'll kind of be synced up as to which ones you've listened to.
Thank you, Ben.
Listeners, you didn't know you were going to learn that today.
No, I didn't know I was going to learn that today, but I did.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
For the Noobs, Friday Night Magic.
Oh, man. So we got a listener who asked, what's Friday Night Magic like? Or, yeah, that was their specific question. But we can talk generally about, like, what's it going to be like if you go to your store to play?
Yeah, maybe you're thinking about experimenting with store events.
Yeah, man.
But you're not sure what the side effects could be or if you should mix them with other events that you go to.
You're feeling really pressured by your peers to go to store events, even though you've never gone to a store event.
Yeah.
And you're not sure if it's a good idea or not.
Maybe you've thought about it a lot. You've looked it up on the internet and watched some videos of some F&Ms. But you're like, maybe it's time to make the jump to real.
You've read like some firsthand written accounts of what it's like to be at an F&M.
Yeah.
Written by people who are there.
Maybe when the topic comes up, you always pretend that you've gone to lots of store events.
But you but you actually haven't.
Maybe you subscribe to a certain magazine that you never mind. I was trying to make a paper porn joke. It didn't work.
No.
Paper porn?
Yeah, like in a magazine.
Who calls it paper porn?
This guy.
Is that like paper magic?
Yeah.
It's like paper magic. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Paper magic. Paper porn.
There's an app. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
So, Megan.
If you don't have Modo, you can play paper magic. If you don't have the internet, paper porn.
Paper porn. Yeah.
So, what were we talking about?
FNM.
FNM. So, FNM's, the one thing to know is that...
It's a good way to get into your first store event.
It really is. And it's important to look up beforehand because different stores actually have different FNM events.
Some of them hold FNMs on Tuesdays.
That's not what I mean.
I'm just kidding. Continue.
FNM, your store may have events on other days of the week. That is true. But some stores do booster draft FNMs. Some stores do, like standard FNMs. Those are, I think, the two most common kinds.
Right.
Some stores will do an early event one and then a late event of the other.
Almost every magic store has a Friday Night Magic.
Yes.
So if there's a store that's local to you, they probably have some kind of event. And yeah, you can always call them up and find out what that kind of event is. If it's a limited event, you don't have to bring anything other than maybe some sleeves if you want to play with sleeves. Because they will, you'll pay for the packs there and you'll build your deck out of that.
Yep.
And
they usually have lands available.
They have lands for you and you'll shuffle up and play. If it's a standard event, you are expected to show up with a standard legal 60 card deck.
And a 0 or 15 card sideboard.
Yes, and a 0 or 15 card sideboard. Although I think now it can be any size. I think they changed that rule.
Is it? I thought they made the rule so that you don't have to like do a one-for-one exchange in and out of your deck. You can like just add two cards and be playing with 62. But I'm not sure.
Anyone's going to care.
Don't worry about it, guys. Don't worry about it.
And if you don't have a standard deck, you can buy Magic releases products called Event Decks.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a standard legal 60 card deck, and it's a good way to sort of get started. If you just want to play, you're not too concerned about having the most competitive deck, just buy it off the shelf, shuffle it up,
get ready to play.
Get ready to throw those victory signs in there. Yeah, they're just
like about $30 or something like that.
The current event deck is, I think, like a mono black deck. And it's obviously not like the
premier mono black.
Exactly. But it has a lot of really good cards. It has some pack rats, it has a hero's downfall, it has a desecration demon. It's got some really interesting stuff in there.
So you could even buy that and then build out from there if you're interested.
Yeah. And there are some people who, after they've been going to FNMs for a while, if they sort of want to challenge themselves or like give themselves limitations, they'll buy an event deck and
just to see.
Exactly. Or they'll be like, oh, I'll buy this event deck and play with it, and then I have to build, like, I can only add cards from my collection or trade cards out of this. Like, I can't buy any cards to add to this event deck. I have to just add on what I have.
And maybe Friday night doesn't work for you though, and you still want to get into store events. Maybe on your Friday, maybe you spend your Friday nights at a ditch digging club.
Yeah. Oh, I that was me.
I love ditch digging. 1 year ago. Club.
Ditch digging club. Yeah.
Most stores will have some other event some night of the week.
Mm-hmm.
But that'll be specific to the store, obviously. So check that out. And also, another good way to get started to jump in is pre-release events. We just had one recently for Born of the Gods. Mm-hmm. But there's a pre-release event usually every, like, four times a year. So it'll be one every 3 months or so.
Yeah.
And they happen right before a set comes out, so it's the first chance everyone gets to play with the cards, and it's a sealed deck event. So you can just open some packs, build a deck out of that, and play with them. And it's super casual, even more casual than a Friday Night Magic, because everyone's learning the cards. Usually no one's going to be a big dick to you about knowing the rules or whatever, and it's a good time.
Yeah.
So my question is, if I'm going to an FNM for the first time, I'm kind of wondering how much Magic am I going to end up playing? Mm-hmm. I suppose it varies how many rounds based on how many people are there. What kind of prize payout is there going to be? And that's just also going to vary from store to store. But typically, is there a typical amount of games you can probably expect to play?
Usually, I think about four rounds.
Four rounds?
Three or four would be typical.
Okay.
And then the prize payout really does vary from store to store. Yeah. Most stores do it on a win-loss record, mm-hmm. so it's not going to be your place afterwards, just because there's so many people and there's not a ton of, like, there's not mm-hmm. 5 or 6 rounds, so they can't really do, like,
right.
a top 8.
Right.
So they'll do, like, oh, if you have 3 wins and 1 loss, then you'll get 3 packs or whatever.
Yeah. I played at a store where they dipped the loser in gold and awarded it to the winner.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's that giant gold person you have in your room?
Yep.
I yeah. always wondered
I
where
an
that
Oscar.
Came from.
I thought it was an
I thought
Oscar.
It was a giant yeah. life-size Oscar.
Yeah, that's what happened to my brother.
But your work in wow. Schindler's List was good.
You were really great in that film,
That's
Ben.
Why I thought
you
it was
really
an Oscar.
You were really great in that film.
Thank you. Thank you.
And don't be afraid if it's your first time going to an FNM. There will be people there. If you just say, you know, I'm a newer player, they will give you hints and tips. They will help you out,
mm-hmm.
Especially if you say
yeah.
you're a new
yeah,
player.
Yeah, definitely. If you're tell the person at the store that's your first time, and they'll tell you what to do.
You got to get a DCI number.
Oh yeah.
I remember
but
that
you
day.
Can get the you can get that at your store. If yeah, you go and you register and they're like, do you have a DCI number? And you're like, no. And then you fill out some papers.
Megan, do you remember getting your DCI number?
I really do.
Me too.
I really do.
Me too.
It was a great day.
Yeah. And maybe if you haven't played in a very long time, they can look up your old DCI number, or you can go on the Wizards website and look it up ahead of time. Or if you can't find it for whatever reason, you can get a new one and then just merge it with your old one later.
If you don't have a social security number, you might be an illegal alien.
So Tom Hanks actually has a bronzed Liam Neeson in his house.
What?
I'm lying.
I was like, okay, how do you know random Tom Hanks trivia? Secondly, if I was rich and had unlimited supplies of cash,
yeah.
I would definitely have a bronze Liam Neeson in my house.
I 100% would. I was just saying that because Liam Neeson, in fact, did not win an Academy Award for Schindler's List.
No?
Tom Hanks did.
For Schindler's List?
No. yes.
Wait, do I remind you guys of Liam Neeson? Is that what we're talking about?
You don't, actually.
Ben, quick, do a Liam Neeson impression for us.
I'm going to find you. I'm going to hunt you down. And I'm going to sit you down and force you to learn how to play Magic the Gathering. And then I'm going to beat you in 3 games. I will deck you. I will kill you with poison. And I will reduce your life total to 0 simultaneously.
Dead on. Dead on. History shit. Morph.
Do you guys know what Morph is? Tell me what you know about Morph. Maria.
Yes. Okay. So Morph was something from an old time.
You're doing great so far.
Okay. And what it was you could play a creature from your hand who had Morph face down on the battlefield, and it was a 2/2. And then at some point during the game, you could pay the Morph cost to flip it up, right side up, and mm-hmm. then it would become the regular creature that it was meant to be.
Yes.
That's what I know.
Yes. And I know that some of them had, like, abilities. Like, when you turned it over, something else would happen. Like, oh, you pay the morph cost and you turn it over, and you also counter a spell or something like that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, if you've never played with morph cards, they're super confusing.
I can see why Wizards got away from this.
You basically have the option to play the card face down as a 3-mana 2/2. So you pay 3 colorless mana for a 2/2, and it's a face down card.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Then later you can pay the morph cost to flip it up. Anytime you'd have priority, you can pay the morph cost to flip it up. So the idea is, back when it first came out in Onslaught block, there were a bunch of these morph creatures running around. People would play them as 2/2s, and then it was a huge question mark, right?
Yeah.
Because there were just a ton of morph creatures.
Like, and you don't know which one it
right.
is.
So you don't know if they're going to flip this up and it's just going to be like, oh, it's a 3/3. Or if it's going to be a gigantic 7/7 flying trample, or something with lifelink, or something with the triggered ability that'll counter a spell.
So it's kind of like you were playing the game blind because you didn't know what was going to... I mean, you. In
a
way,
it's a little bit like it's still a card in their hand, but it has flash.
Yeah.
And... That's it. And it's a 2/2 creature. And it's a 2/2 creature, but it's also a different creature that has flash and potentially another ability.
Yeah. So this first appeared in Onslaught Block, and it was brought back in Time Spiral. And we also saw some... Were there some morph cards in Modern Masters?
No.
Okay, no. I just made that up.
Yeah.
But there are some in, I think, on the online cube. And so you'll see a few there. And if you play with your own cube, maybe you have a few in there as well. So I'm going to give a couple examples of morph creatures. Here's one. Apeto Alchemist. It is a 2-mana creature.
Wait, a what?
Apeto.
Spell it.
Apetto. Maybe it's a feto.
Let's go with a feto.
Do you guys don't like Apeto Alchemist?
I like to make gold and sleep with children.
Okay, so he's a creature wizard. He's a 1/2 for 2 mana. He's blue. And you can tap him to untap target artifact or creature. And his morph cost is 1 blue. So you could play this as a 3-mana 2/2, which is better than a 1/2, and just attack with him some. And then eventually, maybe you've got some other creature you're beating down with, and 2/2s are no longer relevant. Then, I'm going to morph this out, use its ability to untap something else, and surprise blocker. So yeah. It's kind of like, you've got a breaching hippocamp or something.
So wait, which one is the... What do I pay to put it face down?
3.
You always pay 3 to cast it as a face down 2/2.
Okay, so every morph creature is just 3, and it's a face down 2/2.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's like the most generic magic creature, right? Is yes. A 3-mana 2/2.
And then with the morph cost is whatever it says in the morph cost.
Right. The morph cost in this case is 1 blue. That's what it costs to turn it face up.
Gotcha.
Here's another example. This one's
one. Go on. What would its cost be to just cast it outright?
It had a casting cost of 2.
Oh.
So you just pay it for 2, which brings up an interesting point because paying it for the morph cost and then flipping it usually is going to cost you more. It's almost like playing something as bestow, right?
Yeah.
Because you kind of get these 2 activations, but you end up spending more mana overall.
Okay. New question.
Yeah.
Is the morph thing something that I can do at any time?
Yeah, anytime you have priority.
Okay. And so say I have this face down 2/2 and I block with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so it's like declare blockers, do you have any effects? And I morph it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that creature still blocking? Like is my morphed guy, whatever I flipped it into blocking?
Right, it's the same creature, so it would still be blocking, yeah.
Okay, cool.
And you also...
God, you guys.
That's wild.
You also get a little bit of protection because paying the morph cost does not use the stack. So you can't morph it, and then your opponent can't basically shock it in response. It can't kill the creature in response because...
It gets to morph.
Because that would suck, right?
Yeah, it would really suck.
If you pay the morph cost, and they're like... Burp, 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 burp.
Yeah.
Cool. So then what other cards have morph? Well, there's a few like crazy ones... that we could talk about. There's Achroma, Angel of Fury.
Sounds good.
This was in Planar Chaos. This is a 8-mana 6/6 legendary creature angel. It's a red creature. Achroma, Angel of Fury can't be countered. Has flying, trample, protection from white and from blue, and it has fire breathing. So you can pay 1 red mana to give it +1/+0. This one was from the Time Spiral block when they brought it back, and the morph cost was 6, so 3RRR. So you could play it as a 2/2, and they're like, I'll mark that 2/2. Boom!
Oh my god!
Gigantic trampling flyer.
Yikes!
Yep.
So my question is, were people always constantly like kind of just peeking under their morph cards?
Yeah, like what if you forget?
Yeah, you can look under your own morph cards.
So it's
we're getting to the same like sleeve problem. I feel like that people got into with Innistrad.
The double-sided cards.
Yeah.
Well, no, because this one you just play it face down.
Yeah.
Like, okay. There's nothing on the other side. Yeah. It's just the back of the magic
card. Oh, I get it.
I always wondered what would happen if someone did it, and then at the end of the game, it was like, oh, that was just a land.
yeah! Couldn't you?
Oh my god, could you?
No, I mean, no, you, like it's kidding. Not legal.
That's but you
legal.
Could.
But you could probably, you might be able to get away with it. But then when the game's over, presumably your opponent can be like, oh, I want to look at
what's that card?
Yeah.
Well, no, you don't have to show them. It's like you don't have to show them what's in your hand. I burped in the middle of that sentence.
Like, if they, so if I'm like, okay, I want to see what that card is, and you're just like, I concede. I'm just gonna
then
go.
Then they could probably call a judge. Like, I feel like they could be like, God. Judge, what the fuck is that card?
But then if you, like if they beat you.
I think we've invented a new mechanic, you guys.
A new form of cheating.
A new form of cheating?
No, I'm saying.
No, I want to hear, okay, I want to hear from a judge. If you're a judge.
Okay.
And this happened, someone won, and then are they required to show what their morph cards are? Because that's valid if you're playing multiple games against someone.
Especially. I feel like if you lost, then your opponent's like probably not going to care. But if like your opponent won and they have like a bunch of face down cards.
Although either way, you probably want to know what it is for future reference.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So
that's a good question.
So I just want to read a few of the crazy morph things there were. Most of the super crazy ones were in Time Spiral Block. But there's one that's a Blistering Fire Cat. This is a 4-mana 7/1 with Trample and Haste. And at the end of turn, you sacrifice it. And it has a morph cost of red. So you could play this as a beater. And then when you're ready to finish him off, you just morph it out. Boom.
Boom, dead.
This is from Time Spiral Black. Brine Elemental. This is a morph. It has a morph cost of 7. And when you turn it face up, each opponent skips his or her next untap step.
Wait. Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. This, I think, was part of a combo deck where you would basically lock your opponent out of having untapped steps.
Oh, that's still a thing in, like, Legacy. There are, like, prison decks.
Prison decks?
Yeah, they're called prison decks because they prevent your opponent from playing anything.
I think the Brine Elemental is in a deck called Pickles. Because that's how you make pickles.
That's adorable.
You brine something.
I'm going to make a prison soap deck.
Another good one was Exalted Angel. This is a 4/5 white flyer, and whenever it deals damage, you gain that much life. So it has kind of the primordial lifelink.
Stack link.
And it has a morph cost of only 4. So you could go turn 3, turn 4, attack with it. Morph it into a 4/5 and then now you win because you get to gain life.
That answers my other question, which is that's like a mythic, right? Or some shit?
That was a rare.
Really good.
It was before mythics were a thing.
Okay. So when you morph it, it doesn't have summoning sickness. If it's already been under your control.
It's considered to be the same
creature.
It's the same card. It's
you
the same permanent.
You changed it into something else.
You might say you morphed it.
You morphed it.
It's just like a flip card in that sense where
it's
the same. It's still the same permanent.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Do you think this was kind of Wizard's sort of way to think about Mana Screw a little bit?
No.
I think they just needed a new mechanic. They're like, what are we going to do? I know. Let's be able to play cards face down.
So the big thing in Onslaught Block was it was a very big creature and tribal theme set. Mm-hmm. And so having this morph ability meant there was a lot of interesting creature stuff going on. There was also one of the expansions in the set was entirely creatures. Like the whole set was creatures. There were no instant sorceries or enchantments.
Really?
Yeah. So they put a lot of these morph creatures in there with triggered abilities that made them, that, you know, kind of filled the roles that usually is filled by those other effects.
Wow.
So, yeah. It definitely made the game interesting. There was a lot of, like, bluffing, and you definitely had to know, like, if you didn't know what the possible cards were, you could just get in really big trouble.
I kind of like the idea of still being able to play anything, a land from your hand face down as a 2/2.
That seems like a really powerful ability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because think about Unlimited, if you get flooded, it's just like, oh, no, if I'm not flooded, I actually just have like a shit ton of tutus.
Yeah, the game would be way different if that were true.
Well,
yeah.
I'm just making this up.
Yeah.
You play the land face down. Uh-huh. It's a tutu. Uh-huh. But if your opponent, this is what the mechanic called, calling you out, calls you out and you says, that's a land, and it's actually a land, you automatically lose. But it's risky. But
this sounds like the game of Magic.
What do they lose if they're wrong?
Then they lose. It's like when in football when you use a timeout to challenge a play.
Yeah. If you're wrong, you lose.
Right? Oh, you lose your timeout. I don't know. Maybe it shouldn't be the game. Maybe it should only be like 5 life or something.
That's not a creature. That's a land.
That's a land.
Oh, really? Are you calling me out? Flip, and it's a creature. Sucker.
You lose.
Oh,
how about
God.
A game of Magic where you just pick one of two cards?
Okay.
And if it's the wrong card, you lose. Yeah, so that's how Morph works, and... Yeah, if you guys have any morph questions, you can ask us, and we'll put you in contact with an expert.
You can tweet us your questions at MTAcast, and we will get to them on the show.
And if you're a judge and I explain this wrong, let me know. Oh, guys, Rule 702.36C states that you can't cast a card face down if it doesn't have morph. So.
Oh, okay. Dang it. My plan's out the window. Abby. So we've got some, we've asked for some submissions for Dear Abby on the show, which is where our listeners will ask us questions and we'll do our best to answer.
Yeah.
So we've got a few here. One of the questions was about rogue decks.
Mm. Yeah, I have it right here.
First of all, what? Oh yeah, sure, read it.
Dear Abby, why do so few people play rogue decks? If they're just playing to win, why aren't they playing real gambling games?
That could be said, I think, you know, just in general.
Yeah.
Playing a Magic game. If you're always playing to win, why aren't you gambling instead?
Well, maybe because you're not good at it. But either way, you're losing money. But I guess with Magic, you're potentially losing less money than if you were bad at, like, poker and you played it all the time.
Probably.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, my basic answer is just, like, it's more fun. To me, it's like, I will invest the time to try to become better at Magic, and I enjoy it. I would not invest time trying to become better at poker because I don't enjoy it. Like, I'm a competitive person who wants to win because that's what I like to do. But at the same time, like, poker is boring.
Right. But I think the question is then, if your goal is to have fun, then why aren't you playing the most fun deck instead of the deck that will win the most?
Because for me... I mean, this sounds awful, but at least for me, it's like winning is fun.
That sounds terrible.
Right? Awful. Well, I mean, like, it is. It's fun. It's fun to play Magic all the time, but it is more fun when you're doing well at it.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yes.
That's just my opinion, at least.
Yeah. Personally, I find it very enjoyable, the process of. Learning to get better and improving and knowing, you know, that I have an understanding of how to beat the game.
Yeah.
And part of that is, you know, playing competitive decks, playing decks that can win.
Yeah.
Or learning the skill of how to put those decks together.
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, just taking a deck off the internet, you know, might seem like, you know, there's no skill in that. You're not actually learning anything. You're just taking a list off the internet. But, I mean, even if I do that, I'm still picking the list. You know, I'm picking which deck I want to put together. I'm determining which deck is the best. It's not like it's not like every format has a deck that's always, you know,
the best
that's always known to be the best. You have to, I mean, for any given tournament, the deck that you pick is, you know, it's a very involved choice.
Yeah. And, like, you can argue, like, oh, yeah, like, Mono Black is so great right now. But it's like, that doesn't win every tournament.
Right, exactly.
There's a lot of play. And, like, there is something fun also about, like, there's a process of, like, picking a, like you said, like, picking a deck and spending a lot of time to become good at it. Like, it's fun to get to really know a deck and be able to play it really well.
Yeah, learning all the interactions of a certain deck is also a skill. So even if you know you're just taking a deck that someone has told you this is the best deck, play this deck if you want to win. There's still a process of learning how to play that deck against every other deck, and that can be a lot of fun to get to the point where you feel like you know that.
And at least for me, I would pick if I can get, like, if I can pull the pieces together, I would pick a tier one deck because I want it to pay me back for the effort that I'm putting in.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm going to spend, you know, like, several months becoming really good at learning, like, learning this deck and becoming good at playing it, like, I would like it then to be a deck that will perform for me.
Right. You want that investment. Yeah.
I don't want to lose just because it's like I have a bad matchup against, like, 70% of the field or something like that.
That said, personally, I usually just play the deck that is the most fun. Like when I played in the Modern GP in Kansas City, I played Nivik Cyclops because it looked like a really fun combo deck.
Yeah. I played Boggles because it is also fun.
Yeah.
I would recommend Boggles.
But basically, it's up to every person to decide what they want to get out of something.
Yeah.
Are they trying to improve? Are they trying to get to a point where they can win a GP?
Like money, something a GP, like that. Yeah.
And
like
so,
that.
If you're comparing that, you know, why aren't you just gambling? Well, I mean, I think you're right. Playing poker is
boring.
Is not as much fun as playing Magic.
I would like to submit that poker is fun, but
fine, Maria.
I'm just putting that out there.
You submitted it.
But yeah. I just like to win. It's fun to win. I don't know.
Yeah.
And you know, I would play poker for money too, so maybe it's not exclusive.
Can I ask you guys, when you win, do you feel like you're better than your opponent?
No.
No.
Depends. If I am, then I do.
But when you when you win, what meaning do you take away from that?
Like, I take meaning of my personal skill and how I played that game.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, when I win, I mean, I think it depends on how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes
that's
true. It's like, oh, it was a bad matchup for them and a good matchup for me. Sometimes it's like, oh, you got mana screwed and I did not. And I think, I never think like, oh, I'm a better player.
No.
There are times when I'm like, oh.
Sometimes I it's a, true, but.
Well, no, like sometimes I'm like, I played a better game than you did.
Yeah.
Like, I played more correctly or I played better. But I, like, that's just one game that I played.
Okay.
Not the end all be all.
Yeah, sure. What does it do for you, Ben?
Well, that's an interesting question because I tried to divorce the meaning of the win itself.
Right.
Because whether or not you won doesn't have a lot of correlation to whether or not you played correctly. There's so many factors, right? There's your play skill versus your opponent's. There were the cards you drew versus the cards your opponent drew.
Yeah.
There were, you know, there's other.
Like some, yeah. Sometimes you're both in like top deck mode, and it's like you top deck something relevant.
Right.
And
yeah.
Not.
Right. There's your knowledge of the format versus your opponent's. There's so many things that.
Did you eat breakfast and they did not eat breakfast?
Sure. Yeah.
Did you just put on socks from the dryer and they have
day old socks? Are you wearing contacts and they should be wearing glasses, but they have recently misplaced those glasses? And so, in fact, their eyesight is not quite what it should be.
Do they have one tooth that's a fang?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's weird for them.
Brain worm.
Yeah. Or do they just have like what are the stomach ones?
Babies.
Babies? Is your opponent...
I was thinking about tapeworms.
Oh, is your opponent more pregnant than you?
Is your opponent more pregnant? Yes.
Gross.
How can you tell? Megan, which of us is more pregnant right now?
I think you're... Ah, God, I don't know. It's a good one. It's a good question. It's a good question.
Side note, neither of us are pregnant.
Neither of us is pregnant at all, so... Hence why it's a difficult question.
Oh, what were we talking about? Oh, yeah. Oh. Okay, anyway. Should we move to the next question? Have we answered that?
Wait, that made me think of something. Because someone had asked this, Dear Abby, and I feel like we've covered it a lot, so I don't want to go super in depth, but they said, Dear Abby, how do you deal with playing with people who are kind of jerks? Douchebags make me sad and I want magic to make me happy. I feel like we've addressed that, right? Yes. Like, try to be nice to them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're just nervous. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they are dicks. I don't think we've talked about, like, what you can do to make sure that you're not a dick.
Well, you did write an article about it for our website, magictheamateuring.com.
So you can go there and find that article. Like, saying hi, shaking hands, introducing yourself. But one thing is, I have had people, what makes me feel crappy more than anything is when someone talks down to me after I beat them. Like, a couple of weeks ago playing an event, I beat this guy, and we had a couple of really close games, and I beat him, and I felt like I had made some solid decisions. And, like, part of it, like, we both had really good decks. And in the end, it's like, oh, I beat him because, like, that's how it fell out. And then he was like, yeah, that was close. But it was really relevant that you drew two relevant spells in a row. And it's like, don't do that to somebody. Don't be like, you just won because you top decked a card that you needed. Not because, like...
I think, like, talking down at any point is... I mean, the thing that irks me the most is when people sit down opposite me and they assume they're going to beat me.
Yeah.
Because I'm a girl. So that is the thing that really just makes me a little upset, and then extra happy when I beat them.
Yeah.
Because then they're like, oh.
So I would say, like, don't gloat about your wins. And on the other side of the table, like, don't belittle someone's win for them.
Nice.
That's pretty rough.
Be the bigger person.
Be the bigger person, man.
Mm.
All right.
Dear Abby, I have a noble query about Noble Quarry.
Nicely done.
In a Pack Wars match, I saw a Noble Quarry get bestowed on a creature with Death Touch, archetype of finality, I think, leaving me up against a 3/4 with Death Touch and that all my creatures must block. I had two creatures available to block at the time of the attack, a 1/1 and a 1/3. How does combat work here? What if one of my blockers was a 6/6?
The way that works is it's a 3/4 death toucher, right, that must be blocked. That means it has 3 points of damage. So because of death touch, it can destroy up to 3 creatures because it only has to assign 1 point of damage to each blocker.
Right. So however many creatures are ordering this, say I'm attacking with the archetype of finality with the Noble Quarry lure effect on it.
Mm-hmm.
If you block with 5 creatures, I can put those creatures in whatever order I want, but I only have 3 damage to assign. Mm-hmm. Because the archetype of finality has death touch, I only have to assign 1 point of damage to make it lethal. So it doesn't matter how much toughness the creatures have. I only have to assign 1 point of damage to each, but I will only be able to assign damage to 3 creatures.
Because you only have 3 points of damage.
Because I have to assign 1 each to each one.
You cannot assign 0.5 of damage, even though that 0.5 of damage will be lethal.
So your 6/6 will have traded, potentially.
So what was the first question? A 2/2 and a 1/1?
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
And a 1/2.
A 1/2 and a 1/1, and then a 6/6.
Okay, so if you block with a 1/2 and a 1/1, I will kill both. You still get to assign 1 damage from each to my archetype of finality. In fact, you have to. And so I'll have 2 damage on it, which is not enough to kill it if it's 3/4.
Yeah.
If you had a 6/6, say you had 3 creatures, a 1/2, a 1/1, and a 6/6, I can assign 1 damage to each. You have to assign all your damage to mine, so that will be enough to kill it. So my archetype of finality will trade for your 3 creatures. Then the bestow creature will fall off and it will become a creature and it'll still exist.
Yes.
So it's a good move if you can do it.
That is different from, say, I had just an archetype of finality and then I also had a Noble Quarry in play and I attack with the Noble Quarry. Archetype of finality gives everything death touch.
Yeah.
But it's still just a 1/1 death touch.
Yeah.
So if you block it, if you have 3 creatures available that all have to block it, it's only gonna be able to kill one of them because it's just a little 1/1 with death touch.
Yeah.
So you just pick one of them, kill it off.
So for example, a Sedge Scorpion, if you decided to triple block that for some reason, They can only...
That said, Scorpion's going to be so worried about fucking the pump. Dead.
They can only kill whichever one they ordered to be first, because they only have one damage to assign, unless they pump it. Which, if you do pump it, then your triple block is pretty good.
Just note of advice, never triple block. If you don't have to triple block the said scorpion because it has lore on it, don't triple block the said scorpion. Yeah. Just don't do it.
Usually one is enough.
Just don't do it.
And then I play Feral Invocation.
No.
Goodbye. Dear Abby, is it acceptable to use a dragon shield sleeve as a condom in times of dire need?
As long as it's not an ultra pro.
Yeah.
Ugh. Okay, but can't really the answer is no.
Your results may vary.
Let us know how it goes if you try it out.
Yeah, I mean...
It'll be the first and last time.
Personally...
It will be the first and last time you're having sex with that person.
Personally, it doesn't matter to me what you use as a condom.
Good point. Very good point.
But just maybe check... with anyone else that this decision might affect.
You don't want to make this decision in a void when you're having to use card sleeves.
I would not assume that this would be okay in any sense.
Ever? What if you're on a deserted island and that's all you have?
Why are you most concerned with having sex on the desert island?
What else are you gonna do?
Try to get off the desert island.
Try to get off! That's what I'm talking about.
What if a deck washes up on shore and you don't have enough sleeves to sleeve it up?
Because you wasted them.
Wasted? I don't think so.
It better have been good sex, okay?
I don't think that's possible.
With the dragon shield.
That does. It's true. It's true. That's very true.
Okay. That's all the ones I have written down.
I have one more.
Okay.
Who would win in a snowball fight? Jace, Tamio, Tezzeret, or Kiora? Well, not Kiora. It doesn't snow by the ocean.
I don't know.
How do you know that's true?
I don't know who Tezzeret is.
Tezzeret is an artifact dude, right?
He is an artifact.
No, he's not an artifact. Like, he himself is not an artifact, but I think he has a lot of artifact manipulation of some sort.
Tezzeret the Seeker. Let's see. Actually, I think there are two different versions of Tezzeret.
Of Tezzeret.
So the first one was from Shards of Alara. Okay. Tezzeret the Seeker. He's blue. He's 5 mana. He has 4 loyalty, +1, untap up to 2 target artifacts. You can see he's got this.
I told you it was artifact.
Look at those arms.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's definitely Tezzeret. Look at those arms.
He's got a crazy artifact arm.
Yeah.
I believe that's some kind of like Phyrexian arm or something. I don't know.
Oh.
His +1 is untap up to 2 artifacts. His -X is search your library for an artifact card with converted mana cost X or less and put it onto the battlefield. And his ultimate is a -5 that says artifacts you control become 5/5 artifact creatures until end of turn.
I think he's going to win because he has that crazy arm.
He does have that crazy arm.
He does have the crazy arm.
Tamio is real small, though. Like, maybe she'll just be able to evade everybody. She won't be able, like, you won't be able to hit her. She just darts in and out of snowballs.
And I feel like she can control stuff with her mind, so she might be able to throw a lot of snowballs.
That's true. She can tap something.
And Jace just has an endless supply of snowballs.
So my bet is on Tamio, but Tezzeret could easily have a snowball throwing machine.
That's true. He's just gonna get. He's gonna make a snowball throwing artifact
or some kind of icy manipulator.
Oh snap!
I get it.
That was an artifact reference. we're not giving any credit to Jace here. We don't think that he could do like some snowball mind manipulation.
No, because
he's just a mind. He just sculpts other people's minds, not physical things.
Right.
All
right,
guys.
But he could make you forget how to make a snowball.
Oh shit!
And in the land of in the land of no snowballs, the one snowball at a time man is king.
Wiser words have never been said.
That was a profound, profound speech, Ben.
Flavortext Theater presents Myth or Mythic.
Ooh.
Ben, explain this game.
Well, guys, we're back for another round of Myth or Mythic. This is a game where Megan and Maria have to guess whether or not I am reading to them the text of real magic cards or magic cards that I just made up.
Ooh.
Nice.
I'm just going to lay down some rules so you guys can play along at home. First of all, I get all these cards from magiccard.info. I just press the random button and I take whatever comes up. So I'm not trying to make this extra hard on you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't skip any.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's like an island, but that hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
I won't make any cards that are just identical to existing cards. So if I read a card and you're like, oh, I know that card, then that's probably the real card.
Okay.
That's just that I know of, so who knows? And I'm only reading the oracle text, not the actual text that's printed on the cards, mostly because I don't want to have to pretend to write in like alpha speech.
Okay.
If you guys want, you can ask for a hint, either the set, rarity, illustrator, or the flavor text.
All right.
Awesome. And so I think, Megan, I think you were 1 point ahead of me last time we played, so.
Okay.
All right. So the first card
is Myth or Mythic.
Myth or Mythic. Hellgate Demon.
Oh.
Okay.
Creature Demon 775BB is the mana cost.
What?
At the beginning of your upkeep, if you do not have more creature cards in your graveyard than target opponent, sacrifice a creature other than Hellgate Demon. If you can't, that opponent may return a creature card from his or her graveyard to his or her hand.
Okay. Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
It also has flying and trample.
Oh, shit.
Wow.
Well, if that's real, that's quite the card.
I feel like there's a cube card.
The other card is Demon of Death's Gate. Creature.
Oh.
Demon. 9/9. 6BBB. That's the mana cost. You may pay 6 life and sacrifice 3 black creatures rather than pay Demon of Death Gate's mana cost. Flying and trample.
Oh!
Snap.
I really like that second one.
Oh, snap, bitches. What do you think?
Oh,
okay, can we get sets for each of them?
Yes. The set, which one?
You want the set for? I want the set for both of them.
Which one first?
Oh, what was the first one that you read?
Oh, Hellgate Demon.
Hellgate Demon.
Magic, 2010.
Okay.
Mythic Rare.
Okay.
99 out of 249.
Okay.
All right,
and
how about,
the
other one?
Demon of Death's Gate?
Magic, 2011. Mythic Rare, 92 out of 249.
Okay, do these have flavor text?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
But you can't get it because you asked for the set.
What?
What?
No!
We didn't realize that we could only get one! Okay. I'm going to go with the Hellgate Demon is the mythic. I only realized that those two words have the same root as I was in the middle of saying them.
Which one do you think is real?
I think that the Hellgate Demon is real.
The first one.
The first one.
Oh, God. It's so hard. I guess the first one is... Oh, yeah, I think the first one is real, but I think the second one's really cool.
Okay, so you both think Hellgate Demon is the real card?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That is incorrect.
No!
The real card is Demon of Death's Gate.
No way!
Flavor text. I'll read the flavor text right now.
I want to hear your fake flavor text.
Once opened, the gate is not easily closed.
Yep.
Boring.
Okay. What's the fake Hellgate one? Demon?
The locks on the cages of the damned are opened with keys of marrow, sinew, and blood.
Wait, is that the real one or the fake
one? That's
the
real one.
That's the real one.
I was like, Ben, you should work for Wizards flavor text.
Nice try, guys. Nice try. All right.
What's the next one?
Next card. Echoing Truth. Instant. 1U. Return target non-land permanent and all other permanents with the same name as that permanent to their owner's hand. Or Resounding Insight, instant, 1UU. Choose target permanent. For each permanent with the same name as that permanent, draw a card.
No.
Oh.
I'm just going to go out on a limb.
Yeah.
I think the first one is the real one.
Can I get flavor text on those two, please?
Echoing Truth. Mm-hmm. A single lie unleashes a tide of disbelief.
Okay. What about the other one?
Resounding insight. A single lie unleashes a tide of disbelief.
What? I think it's the first one also.
I think the reason I'm guessing that is that name sounds familiar to me.
I think that the second one just sounds like more of a bullshit name.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
The real card is Echoing Truth. This was a card in Modern Masters.
Ding, 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 ding. No wonder I remembered it.
So you should probably know it. Yep. This is the card that bounced all your Sapperling tokens at the same time.
Oh, shit. I don't think I've ever had that happen to me.
Lucky.
Yeah.
Also, I forgot to write flavor text for the other
one. You don't say.
All right. We got right. another one on our hands.
Okay.
What is it?
Florid lake drinker.
What?
Creature, tree folk warrior, 3/5, 3GG. When Florid lake drinker deals damage to an opponent, you may destroy an island that player controls. Or Anurid swarm snapper, creature, frog beast, 1/4, 2G, reach. This creature can block creatures with flying. Activated ability, 1G. Anurid Swarm Snapper can block an additional creature this turn.
Anurid Swarm Snapper.
The question is, did Ben think of the name Anurid?
Or didn't he? Or did he think of the name Florid Lake Drinker?
Florid? Does he look like a guy who would think of Florid?
That's the stupidest word that I've ever heard.
Lake drinker.
That doesn't make any sense.
Because it doesn't drink your islands.
Wait, what?
If a card was named Lake Drinker, I would think it would destroy islands.
It does destroy islands.
I was not listening.
Oh, I love this game.
Florid just doesn't make any sense.
Like, Florid is not a word.
It is a word, but it doesn't make any sense.
What does Florid mean?
It's like someone who's like really flushed, but all the time.
Okay.
I think also kind of chubby. But I'm not 100% on that detail.
Okay. The second card is boring to me.
I think that the second card is real and the first card is not real.
I'm going to feel like I agree with you, but I'm going to guess the first one to be okay. different.
Shake things up.
Yep.
So wait, you think the first one...
I think that the first one is fake.
Uh-huh. And I think the first one is real.
All right, so you think Florid Lake Drinker is fake. You think Anurid Swarm Snapper is fake?
Yes.
The fake card is Florid Lake Drinker.
I knew it!
Yes!
Oh, well. Taking one for the team, I guess. So, Ben, tell me how you came up with Florid.
I just picked it out of the thin air. I was using my thesaurus.
Oh, nice. Nice.
All right. All right.
Next card.
Yeah.
Charge across the Araba.
Ugh.
Instant. Arcane. 4W. Sweep. Return any number of planes you control to their owner's hand. Creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn for each planes returned this way. Or.
That sounds like a sweet card.
Wow.
Study of the Hirochi. Instant. Arcane. 4UU. Recall. Return any number of islands you control to their owner's hand. Draw a card for each island returned this way.
Yeah, right.
I think the first one is real.
Me too. Flavor text us.
Yep.
There's no flavor text on this.
Okay. God damn it. Give us the what's this? Is this the set?
Yeah, set.
All right, give us the sets.
Saviors of Kamigawa. That's Charge Across the Araba. 4/165.
Okay.
Okay.
Or Study the Hirochi, Saviors of Kamigawa, 57/165.
I think it's the first one.
Me too.
I think
it's the first one.
The real card is Charge Across the Araba.
Yay!
Up top. Wow. Woo.
All right, guys. Here's another one.
Okay.
All right.
Last one.
Is the real card Fathom Ruse, Sorcery, 1 blue. Target player reveals his or her hand and discards all tribal cards. Or is it Trap Finder's Trick, Sorcery, one you. Target player reveals his or her hand and discards all trap cards.
Ooh. I just learned about trap cards.
I told you about them yesterday.
Yeah. So I'm going to guess the trap cards one.
Can we get flavor text?
Sure. Which flavor text would you like first?
Just the first one first and the second one second.
Which one did I read first?
The not trap card one you read first.
Fathom Ruse. What we do with your mind is our own business.
Oh.
Omnia, Mero Thought Mage. That was a quote.
Yeah.
That is a good quote.
Okay.
Second one. At some point, every trap finder will lose a hunk of flesh. It's just a question of how much and whether it'll grow back. Arhana, Kazandu Trap Finder.
God, both of those really sound like something wizards could write. Which isn't a compliment. Oh, God.
Yeah, I'm for sure guessing the second one, Trap Finder.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that quote was worse.
It was an awful quote.
It was an awful quote.
But,
which is,
you know, throughout wizards history.
True. All right, let's go with the trap. We'll go with the trap one.
Trap one is...
Is the real card.
Drum roll.
The real card is Trap Finder's Trick.
Yay! You can't stump us, Ben.
Except for that first
But I
one
did write did. The better flavor text.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, that was really good did. Flavor text.
You really did.
Spent a long time on that.
You guys, I forgot that there is a listener who I said that we would do a quick what's wrong with my deck. They sent us a picture of their sealed one, and I just noticed one quick
But
thing.
Was that a real listener or one that I made up?
It was a real listener.
How
Ben,
do you
are
know?
You making up listeners?
How do you know?
Are you
making
up
accounts
name?
And following us to make us feel better about ourselves?
Did you make a name up the name Philip and you're sitting in a race car?
That is a good profile pic.
Yeah, I think that's what he's doing. It might be a plane.
Is it a race car or like a race car bed? Because I...
It might be a fighter plane. I don't know.
Ben's bed is a race car bed.
All right, Philip,
okay.
We're
done with Myth or Mythic.
Okay.
Yes.
Maria got three out of five right.
Yeah.
And yes. Megan got four out of five right. So congratulations, yes. guys. You're still above 50%.
Yes.
Yeah, we are.
Which you should be, since one of the cards you played with.
Yeah.
To do just a real quick what's wrong with my deck.
All right.
This was sent to us on Twitter by Philip. Philip, please let us know if you are sitting in a race car or a fighter plane in this photo. I, for one, can't tell, and I would
let
like
me
to know.
Let me take a look. I'm an expert.
Go for it. What is he sitting in?
You two can enjoy really, this experience of having us wonder about your avatar by following MTA Cast on the Twits.
I'm going to say that's not a fighter plane.
Okay.
Because fighter planes are not white.
Okay, but like a plane. Like
it
a
looks
plane.
Like a plane.
It looks like a plane. It
could be a stunt plane.
Okay, maybe it's a stunt plane. Yeah. Like that's any stunt less plane-y. Cool.
But I think it's probably a land vehicle of some kind. Maybe a turbo tank or
Philip, a land speeder.
Philip, just please tweet us. Let us know.
Or a hover tube. Could be a hover
probably
tube.
Probably a hover tube.
A hover tube.
Can the next card you make up be a hover tube? Sorry, Megan, you can
That's
talk.
Okay.
We can do card That's today. Okay. Hover tube.
So Philip, what I noticed, and I said that I would talk about this real quick because I noticed that you did something with your sealed pool that I used to do a lot and had someone point out to me that it was a common mistake that I was making, which is overvaluing one drops in sealed.
Mm.
Unless you are super aggro and it's really only best to be super aggro if you don't have a different, better plan, then one drops are really, they need to be really good to make your deck.
Right.
So I noticed that you have a lot of one drops, and the problem with that in sealed is that they become outclassed very quickly in sealed, which is why you either need to kill your opponent before they can land anything big, because once they get to turn like 4 or 5 in sealed, they're going to start playing some pretty big fatties.
Right. So and in general, sealed is very different than draft. And so your evaluation of cards has to be very different in draft. In draft, if you have cards that are potentially powerful, then those can be valued highly because you can take other cards that will build around them. And one drops are a good example of that. If you have lots of one drops and lots of ordeals and lots of aggressive cards and you can tap out your opponent, then all those cards are great. But in sealed, you only have what you get, and usually you won't have a critical mass enough to do those strategies, or you won't have a curve that is consistent enough to do that. So I would think about when you build a sealed pool, the number one thing you want to think about is, will this card be relevant if I draw it late? Because a lot of sealed games can go 10 turns, 15 turns, very long games. And even if it's just, for example, you know, a card that has, you know, it's a 1/4 with the drain ability, that can be really good because it gives you something to do with your mana. So you really want, you want to have as few creatures as possible that are just going to be really bad in the late game.
Yeah. So I noticed, so you went green, white, and you have a lot of slightly more expensive blue cards that are actually, pretty quality. Like, your Sphinx's Disciple flyers are just always good. Something that's going to be able to break the stalemate that happens when everybody has a bunch of crap on the ground. Voyage's End, Retraction Helix, and then like Nimbus Naiads, Bestow is always good. So yeah, I would say that I just wanted to point out because that's something that I definitely used to do, and someone was like, oh hey, one drops are just, they're not, like, it can make the core of a good draft strategy because you can draft around it, and really try to get your curve at like 3 and below or 4 and below. But in sealed, those cards are going to be very quickly outclassed.
Put that charging badger back in its badger hole.
Exactly.
Where it belongs.
Yeah.
You guys, I made a card.
What's your card that you made, Marie?
Hover Tube. It cost 4 colorless. It was probably black. It's cost 4 black. It is a 0/0 with flying.
So it costs 3 and a black?
Right, sorry. Okay. 3 and a black. It's a 0/0 with flying. At any point, you can sack a creature to put 2 +1/+1 counters on it. What do you think? Because like a vacuum, it's sucking up. It's gonna like a
die,
tube.
But it's going to die before you ever get to sack something to put counters on it.
It's undying.
No, that's insane. Indestructible. No. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Wait,
if it's indestructible.
It has the keyword undying?
No, that wouldn't work either.
No, it would just continue dying. It would cycle in and out.
No, because undying says if it dies and it has no +1/+1 counters, put it into play with the +1/+1 counter on it.
I'm more of a genius than I thought.
So it has why not just have it start with the +1/+1 counter?
Because I want it to be a tube, and a tube is hollow that has nothing.
But you still start with
the tube. Do you want it to be...
It's a 1/1 tube.
Do you want it to be a 0/0 because 0/0 looks like a tube?
Yes.
So let's be clear.
That's why.
It looks like the emoticon of a tube.
Is this creature type tube?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Creature type tube.
Okay, here's my version of Hover Tube.
Okay, go. Okay.
Hover Tube. It is a 3-mana artifact creature. It is a 2/2 with flying. Hover Tube cannot block creatures with flying or without flying.
Can't block, I think.
Just can't block.
Can't block is the word to leave.
Okay, here's my version of
maybe,
Hover Tube.
Maybe Hover Tube can only block creatures with reach. I like that.
Here's my version of Hover Tube. It's a 3 and a blue. Until your next end step. Not this coming end step.
But in the future?
One. Until your next turn.
Until the week after
exile,
next.
Exile 2 permanents. Any 2 permanents. So until the beginning of your next turn, exile 2 permanents.
Seems good.
And then you get them back?
And then whoever controls them gets them back at the end of your at the beginning of your next
and
turn.
And how much does that
is
cost?
This a tube?
3 and a blue. Because it's exile and it's like it's gone. And but then it's like when you empty
Wait, is that
the
a sorcery?
Vacuum compartment.
Is that a sorcery?
No, it's an instant.
We better make that a sorcery.
Okay.
Hover tube does not sound like something that is not a creature.
What?
Also, that's a white ability. If you want
exile something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exiling something. Yeah. I mean, blue can sometimes flicker stuff.
It's like I was thinking of it kind of like
but
bouncing.
Usually only your own stuff.
Okay, so it's
but yeah, exiling something is like a very
okay. So what about this?
Exiling temporarily.
Hover tube is a 0/0, but when you play it, when you cast it. You must sack upon casting to give it any counters.
As an additional cost, sacrifice yes. any number of creatures, and it comes into play with that many +1/+1 counters.
Correct.
That sure. Why are you sacrificing to your tube? You're putting. Are you like storing creatures in the tube?
Yeah, like they're going inside the tube.
Then shouldn't you get them back when the
is that
when
like
when it dies?
That's like before you vacuum, you like empty. You empty a bag of chip crumbs onto the floor.
Just because.
You're sacrificing.
I think we have some really solid. I think we have a lot of really yeah, solid cards, and
really
we should call
cards.
Them Hover Tube Number One, Hover Tube Number Two,
Hover Tube Number Three.
It's a whole. It's a cycle. There's
yeah.
one of them in each color.
One of each tube.
Mine is, but mine's tube. An artifact creature.
That's oh, fine. So yours can be colorless. That's fine.
So there's one of each color and colorless.
And colorless. Yeah.
Yeah. There's tubes of all types.
The tube rainbow.
You guys. I just wanted to say I got to draft BNG for the first time this past week. Spiteful Returned, you guys. That's a good card.
Correct.
Especially if you have more than one.
Which one is Spiteful? Is that the two mana?
It's the two mana 1/1 that when it attacks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It causes you to lose two life, your opponent to lose two life.
This is the thing, you guys. It bestows for just four. It's really good.
You gotta kill that thing.
I dealt so much damage to people, and it's so great because at the end of the game, if you get them close, then it's like, oh, if you're at two life, I don't even have to really be able to get damage through. I can just attack you.
What were you playing? What colors?
Black-green.
Black-green.
Yeah.
So you were putting this on what kind of stuff? Like 3/3?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Perfect.
Yeah. It was real easy. So
I just put it on there.
Yeah, just put it on there.
It was real easy. It wasn't hard to tap my mana and put it on.
No, it really wasn't.
I
tapped four mana and I played it.
Tried to tap.
And oh, your God. Mana won't tap. Your mana's like, no, fuck you.
Tap the mana.
I have that happen when I want to play a bad card and my mana is like, I will not pay for that. You may not.
Mana mom. That's
I will
a card.
Not use that.
Mana fuck. Five mana. Red, red, red. Red, red. Instant.
Uh-huh.
Target player's mana won't tap like they wanted to.
So they have to tap it like how... Then they have to say, I would like to tap it like this. And you
and
have to be like,
the opponent
no.
can be like, your mana doesn't want to tap like that.
Your mana has to tap like this.
Instead.
Oh, no, I can't leave up my regeneration. Wah, wah. Wah. Everybody, that's our show for
God,
this week.
Thanks for tuning in and listening to the sounds of our voices. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
I always enjoy knowing that there's people on the other end of this microphone.
As we mentioned, you can leave us a review.
Maria, there's just a box at the other end of the microphone.
iTunes.
Or on
Sorry.
Stitcher. And we'll do a pun based on your username. Come along and follow us on Twitter at MTAcast. Tell your friends.
Mm.
You can listen to all of our old episodes at magictheamateuring.com.
Hey!
And many of our new ones on themeatery.org, a social network for magic.
There you go.
And I want to point out that some of the crazy stuff we've been talking about today, like Morph, that's it, comes up sometimes when you play games of Momir, which is a fun online format. And we recently posted a draft video of playing Momir on magictheamateuring.com, and it's pretty fun.
It's a Momir video, not a draft video.
Sorry, yeah.
You can't draft Momir. I pick this
it's
land.
It's the first draft of our Momir video.
I pick this land.
Also, not to shit all over your face, Maria, but Morph never comes up in Momir basically.
Okay, I don't
because
know why I thought it did.
You can't play it face down ever because it's not
couldn't
a card
I,
in
couldn't
your
it
hand.
Just come out for its mana cost that I paid
no.
for?
No.
What?
What?
No.
You can get creatures that have morph,
yeah,
but
that's
they're
just,
already face up.
Yeah, yeah. That's
They'll
that's
never
what I
come
mean.
Down as morph creatures. You just ignore it. I think there is one creature that can turn things face down, but let's not talk about that.
Okay. Anyway, that's all available at magictheamateuring.com. Megan, take us out with a song.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Goodbye.